Ham joined them, nodding to Clubs and punching Spook lightly on the arm. Then he leaned against the railing and rubbed his left calf, cringing slightly.
"I swear, Elland, sometimes sparring with that girl is like trying to fight with a gust of wind. She's never where I think she'll be."
"How did she do that, Ham?" Elland asked. "The jump, I mean. That leap seemed inhuman, even for an Allomancer."
"Used steel, didn't she?" Spook said.
Ham shook his head.
"No, I doubt it."
"Then how?" Elland asked.
"Allomancers draw strength from their metals," Ham said, sighing and putting his foot down. "Some can squeeze out more than others. But the real power comes from the metal itself, not the person's body."
Elland paused. "So?"
"So," Ham said, "an Allomancer doesn't have to be physically strong to be incredibly powerful. If Vin were a ferrochemist, it would be different. If you ever see Sazed increase his strength, his muscles will grow larger. But with Allomancy, all the strength comes directly from the metal. Now most thugs, myself included, figure that making their bodies strong will only add to their power. After all, a muscular man burning pewter will be that much stronger than a regular man of the same Allomantic power."
Ham rubbed his chin, eyeing the passage Vin had left through.
"But, well, I'm beginning to think that there might be another way. Vin's a thin little thing, but when she burns pewter, she grows several times stronger than any normal warrior. She packs all that strength into a small body and doesn't have to bother with the weight of massive muscles. She's like an insect, far stronger than her mass or her body would indicate. So when she jumps, she can jump."
"But you're still stronger than she is," Spook said.
Ham nodded.
"And I can make use of that, assuming I can ever hit her. That's getting harder and harder to do."
Vin finally returned, carrying a jug of chilled juice. Apparently she'd decided to go all the way to the keep, rather than grabbing some of the warm ale kept on hand in the courtyard. She handed a flagon to Ham, and had thought to bring cups for Elland and Clubs.
"Hey," Spook said as she poured, "what about me?"
"That beard looks silly on you," Vin said as she poured.
"So I don't get anything to drink?"
"No."
Spook paused.
"Vin, you're a strange girl."
Vin rolled her eyes. Then she glanced toward the water barrel in the corner of the courtyard. One of the tin cups lying beside it lurched into the air, shooting across the courtyard. Vin stuck her hand out, catching it with a slapping sound, then set it on the railing before Spook.
"Happy?"
"I will be once you pour me something to drink,"
Spook said as Clubs grunted, taking a slurp from his own cup. The old general then reached over, sliding two of the coins off the railing and pocketing them.
"Hey, that's right," Spook said. "You owe me, El. Pay up."
Elland lowered his cup.
"I never agreed to the bet." "You paid Uncle Irritable. Why not me?"
Elland paused, then sighed, pulling out a 10 boxing coin and setting it beside Spook's. The boy smiled, plucking both up in a smooth street thief gesture.
"Thanks for winning the bout, Vin," he said with a wink.
Vin frowned at Elland.
"You bet against me?"
Elland laughed, leaning across the railing to kiss her.
"I didn't mean it. Clubs bullied me."
Clubs snorted at that comment, downed the rest of his juice, then held out his cup for a refill. When Vin didn't respond, he turned to Spook and gave the boy a telling scowl. Finally, Spook sighed, picking up the jug to refill the cup. Vin was still regarding Elland with dissatisfaction.
"I'd be careful, Elland," Ham said with a chuckle. "She can hit pretty hard."
Elland nodded.
"I should know better than to antagonize her when there are weapons lying around, eh?" "Tell me about it," Ham said.
Vin sniffed at that comment, rounding the railing so that she could stand next to Elland. Elland put his arm around her, and as he did, he caught a bare flash of envy in Spook's eyes. Elland suspected that the boy had a crush on Vin for some time. But, well,
Ellen couldn't really blame him for that.
Spook shook his head.
I've got to find myself a woman.
Well, that beard isn't going to help, Vin said.
It's just a disguise, Vin, Spook said. El, I don't suppose you could give me a title or something.
Ellen smiled.
I don't think that will matter, Spook. It worked for you.
Oh, I don't know, Ellen said. Somehow I think Vin fell in love with me despite my title, rather than because of it.
But you had others before her, Spook said. Noble girls.
A couple, Ellen admitted.
Though Vin has a habit of killing off her competition, Ham quipped.
Ellen laughed.
Now see, she only did that once, and I think Shan deserved it. She was, after all, trying to assassinate me at the time.
He looked down fondly, eyeing Vin.
Though I do have to admit, Vin is a bit hard on other women. With her around, everybody else looks bland by comparison.
Spook rolled his eyes.
It's more interesting when she kills them off.
Ham chuckled, letting Spook pour him some more juice.
Lord Ruler only knows what she'd do if you ever tried to leave her, Ellen.
Vin stiffened immediately, pulling him a little tighter. She'd been abandoned far too many times. Even after what they'd been through, even after his proposal of marriage, Ellen had to keep promising Vin that he wasn't going to leave her.
Time to change the topic, Ellen thought, the joviality of the moment fading.
Well, he said, I think I'm going to visit the kitchens and get something to eat. You coming, Vin?
Vin glanced at the sky, likely checking to see how soon it would grow dark. Finally, she nodded.
I'll come, Spook said.
No, you won't, Club said, grabbing the boy by the back of the neck. You're going to stay right here and explain exactly where you got one of my soldiers' uniforms.
Ellen chuckled, leading Vin away. Truth be told, even with the slightly sour end of conversation, he felt better for having come to watch the sparring. It was strange how the members of Kelsier's crew could laugh and make light, even during the most terrible of situations. They had a way of making him forget about his problems. Perhaps that was a holdover from the survivor. Kelsier had apparently insisted on laughing, no matter how bad the situation. It had been a form of rebellion to him. None of that made the problems go away. They still faced an army several times larger than their own, in a city that they could barely defend. Yet if anyone could survive such a situation, it would be Kelsier's crew. Later that night, having filled her stomach at Ellen's insistence, Vin made her way with Ellen to her rooms. There, sitting on the floor, was a perfect replica of the wolfhound she had bought earlier. It eyed her, then bowed its head.
"Welcome, mistress," the Chondra said in a growling, muffled voice.
Ellen whistled appreciatively, and Vin walked in a circle around the creature. Each hair appeared to have been placed perfectly. If it hadn't spoken, one would never have been able to tell it wasn't the original dog.
"How did you manage the voice?" Ellen asked curiously.
"A voice box is a construction of flesh, not bone, your majesty,"
Orsure said.
"Older Chondra learn to manipulate their bodies, not just replicate them. I still need to digest a person's corpse to memorize and recreate their exact features. However, I can improvise some things."
Vin nodded. "Is that why making this body took you so much longer than you'd said?"
"No, mistress," Orsure said. "The hair. I'm sorry I didn't warn you. Placing fur like this takes a great deal of precision and effort."
"Actually, you did mention it," Vin said, waving her hand.
"What do you think of the body, Orsure?" Ellen asked.
"Honestly, your majesty?"
"Of course."
"It is offensive and degrading," Orsure said.
Vin raised an eyebrow. "That's forward of you, Renu," she thought. "Feeling a little belligerent today, are we?" He glanced at her, and she tried, unsuccessfully, to read his canine expression.
But, Elend said, you'll wear the body anyway, right?
Of course, your majesty, Orsir said. I would die before breaking the contract. It is life.
Elend nodded to Vin as if he'd just made a major point. Anyone can claim loyalty, Vin thought. If someone has a contract to ensure their honor, then all the better. That makes the surprise more poignant when they do turn on you.
Elend was obviously waiting for something. Vin sighed.
Orsir, we'll be spending more time together in the future.
If that is what you wish, mistress.
I'm not sure if it is or not, Vin said. But it's going to happen anyway. How well can you move about in that body?
Well enough, mistress.
Come on, she said. Let's see if you can keep up.
I am also afraid, however, that all I have known, that my story, will be forgotten. I am afraid for the world that is to come, afraid that my plans will fail, afraid of a doom worse even than the deepness.
7. Sazed never thought he'd have reason to appreciate dirt floors. However, they proved remarkably useful in writing instruction. He drew several words in the dirt with a long stick, giving his half-dozen students a model. They proceeded to scribble their own copies, rewriting the words several times. Even after living among various groups of rural ska for a year, Sazed was still surprised by their meager resources. There wasn't a single piece of chalk in the entire village, let alone ink or paper. Half the children ran around naked, and the only shelter was the hovels, long one-room structures with patchy roofs. The ska had farming tools, fortunately, but no manner of bows or slings for hunting. Sazed had led a scavenging mission up to the plantation's abandoned manor. The leavings had been meager. He'd suggested that the village elders relocate their people to the manor itself for the winter, but he doubted they would do so. They had visited the manor with apprehension, and many hadn't been willing to leave Sazed's side. The place reminded them of lords, and lords reminded them of pain. His students continued to scribble. He had spent quite a bit of effort explaining to the elders why writing was so important. Finally, they had chosen him some students, partially Sazed was sure, just to appease him. He shook his head slowly as he watched them write. There was no passion in their learning. They came because they were ordered and because Master Terraceman willed it, not because of any real desire for education. During the days before the collapse, Sazed had often imagined what the world would be like once the Lord Ruler was gone. He had pictured the Keepers emerging, bringing forgotten knowledge and truths to an excited, thankful populace. He'd imagined teaching before a warm hearth at night, telling stories to an eager audience. He'd never paused to consider a village stripped of its working men, whose people were too exhausted at night to bother with tales from the past. He'd never imagined a people who seemed more annoyed by his presence than thankful.
"You must be patient with them," Sazed told himself sternly. His dreams now seemed like hubris. The Keepers who had come before him, the hundreds who had died keeping their knowledge safe and quiet, had never expected praise or accolades. They had performed their great task with solemn anonymity. Sazed stood up and inspected his students' writings. They were getting better. They could recognize all of the letters. It wasn't much, but it was a start. He nodded to the group, dismissing them to help prepare the evening meal. They bowed, then scattered. Sazed followed them out, then realized how dim the sky was. He had probably kept his students too late. He shook his head as he strolled between the hill-like hovels.
He again wore his steward's robes with their colorful V-shaped patterns, and he had put in several of his earrings. He kept to the old ways because they were familiar, even though they were also a symbol of oppression. How would future terrorist generations dress? Would a lifestyle forced upon them by the Lord Ruler become an innate part of their culture? He paused at the edge of the village, glancing down the corridor of the southern valley. It was filled with blackened soil, occasionally split by brown vines or shrubs. No mist, of course. Mist came only during the night. The stories had to be mistakes. The thing he'd seen had to have been a fluke. And what did it matter if it wasn't? It wasn't his duty to investigate such things. Now that the collapse had come, he had to disperse his knowledge, not waste his time chasing after foolish stories. Keepers were no longer investigators, but instructors. He carried with him thousands of books, information about farming, about sanitation, about government, and about medicine. He needed to give these things to the Ska. That was what the Synod had decided. And yet, a part of Sazed resisted. That made him feel deeply guilty. The villagers needed his teachings, and he wished dearly to help them. However, he felt that he was missing something. The Lord Ruler was dead, but the story did not seem finished. Was there something he had overlooked? Something larger even than the Lord Ruler? Something so large, so big, that it was effectively invisible? Or do I just want there to be something else? He wondered. I've spent most of my adult life resisting and fighting, taking risks that the other keepers called mad. I wasn't content with feigned subservience. I had to get involved in the rebellion. Despite that rebellion's success, Sazed's brethren still hadn't forgiven him for his involvement. He knew that Vin and the others saw him as docile, but compared with other keepers, he was a wild man. A reckless, untrustworthy fool, who threatened the entire order with his impatience. They had believed their duty was to wait, watching for the day when the Lord Ruler was gone. Ferrochemists were too rare to risk an open rebellion. Sazed had disobeyed. Now he was having trouble living the peaceful life of a teacher. Was that because some subconscious part of him knew that the people were still in danger? Or was it because he simply couldn't accept being marginalized?
"Master Terrasman!"
Sazed spun. The voice was terrified. "Another death in the mists," he thought immediately. It was eerie how the other Ska remained inside their hovels despite the horrified voice. A few doors creaked, but nobody rushed out in alarm, or even curiosity, as the screamer dashed up to Sazed. She was one of the field workers, a stout, middle-aged woman. Sazed checked his reserves as she approached. He had on his pewter mind for strength, of course, and a very small steel ring for speed. Suddenly, he wished he'd chosen to wear just a few more bracelets this day.
"Master Terrasman," the woman said, out of breath. "Oh, he's come back. He's come for us."
"Who?" Sazed asked.
"The man who died in the mists?" "No, Master Terrasman. The Lord Ruler."
Sazed found him standing just outside the village. It was already growing dark, and the woman who'd fetched Sazed had returned to her hovel in fear. Sazed could only imagine how the poor people felt, trapped by the onset of the night and its mist, yet huddled and worried at the danger that lurked outside. And an ominous danger it was. The stranger waited quietly on the worn road, wearing a black robe, standing almost as tall as Sazed himself. The man was bald, and he wore no jewelry, unless, of course, you counted the massive iron spikes that had been driven point-first through his eyes. Not the Lord Ruler. A steel inquisitor. Sazed still didn't understand how the creatures continued to live. The spikes were wide enough to fill the inquisitor's entire eye sockets. The nails had destroyed the eyes, and pointed tips jutted out the back of the skull. No blood dripped from the wounds,
For some reason that made them seem more strange. Fortunately, Sazed knew this particular inquisitor.
Marsh, Sazed said quietly as the mists began to form.
You are a very difficult person to track, Terrasman, Marsh said,
and the sound of his voice shocked Sazed. It had changed somehow, becoming more grating, more gristly. It now had a grinding quality, like that of a man with a cough. Just like the other inquisitors, Sazed had heard.
Track? Sazed asked. I wasn't planning on others needing to find me.
Regardless, Marsh said, turning south. I did. You need to come with me.
Sazed frowned.
What? Marsh, I have work to do here.
Unimportant, Marsh said, turning back, focusing his eyeless gaze on Sazed.
Is it me, or has he become stranger since we last met?
Sazed shivered.
What is this about, Marsh?
The conventicle of Saren is empty.
Sazed paused. The conventicle was a ministry stronghold to the south, a place where the inquisitors and high obligators of the Lord Ruler's religion had retreated after the collapse.
Empty? Sazed asked. That isn't likely, I think.
True, nonetheless, Marsh said.
He didn't use body language as he spoke. No gesturing, no movements of the face. Sazed trailed off.
What kinds of information, wonders, secrets, the conventicle's libraries must hold?
You must come with me, Marsh said. I may need help, should my brethren discover us.
My brethren? Since when are the Inquisitors Marsh's brethren?
Marsh had infiltrated their numbers as part of Kelsier's plan to overthrow the Final Empire. He was a traitor to their numbers, not their brother. Sazed hesitated. Marsh's profile looked unnatural, even unnerving in the dim light. Dangerous.
Don't be foolish, Sazed chastised himself.
Marsh was Kelsier's brother, the survivor's only living relative. As an inquisitor, Marsh had authority over the Steel Ministry, and many of the obligators had listened to him despite his involvement with the rebellion. He had been an invaluable resource for Ellen Venture's fledgling government.
Go get your things, Marsh said.
My place is here, Sazed thought. Teaching the people, not gallivanting across the countryside, chasing my own ego.
And yet...
The mists are coming during the day, Marsh said quietly.
Sazed looked up. Marsh was staring at him, the heads of his spikes shining like round disks in the last slivers of sunlight. Superstitious Ska thought that Inquisitors could read minds, though Sazed knew that was foolish. Inquisitors had the powers of Mistborn, and could therefore influence other people's emotions, but they could not read minds.
Why did you say that? Sazed asked.
Because it is true, Marsh said. This is not over, Sazed. It is not yet begun. The Lord Ruler... He was just a delay, a cog. Now that he is gone, we have little time remaining. Come with me to the conventicle. We must search it while we have the opportunity.
Sazed paused, then nodded.
Let me go explain to the villagers. We can leave tonight, I think.
Marsh nodded, but he didn't move as Sazed retreated to the village. He just remained, standing in the darkness, letting the mist gather around him.
It all comes back to poor Alendi. I feel bad for him, and for all the things he has been forced to endure, for what he has been forced to become.
8.
Vin threw herself into the mists. She soared in the night air, passing over darkened homes and streets. An occasional furtive bob of light glowed in the mists, a guard patrol, or perhaps an unfortunate late-night traveler. Vin began to descend, and she immediately flipped a coin out before herself. She pushed against it, her weight plunging it down into the quiet depths. As soon as it hit the street below, her push forced her upward, and she sprang back into the air. Soft pushes were very difficult, so each coin she pushed against, each jump she made, threw her into the air at a terrible speed. The jumping of a mistborn wasn't like a bird's flight. It was more like the path of a ricocheting arrow. And yet there was a grace to it. Vin breathed deeply as she arced above the city, tasting the cool, humid air. Lúthedain by day smelled of burning forges, sun-heated refuse, and fallen ash. At night, however, the mists gave the air a beautiful, chill crispness, almost a cleanliness. Vin crested her jump, and she hung for just a brief moment as her momentum changed. Then she began to plummet back toward the city. Her mist-cloak tassels fluttered around her, mingling with her hair. She fell with her eyes closed, remembering her first few weeks in the mist, training beneath Kelsier's relaxed yet watchful tutelage. He had given her this. Freedom. Despite 2 years as a mistborn, she had never lost the sense of intoxicating wonder she felt when soaring through the mists. She burned steel with her eyes closed. The lines appeared anyway, visible as a spray of thread-like blue lines set against the blackness of her eyelids. She picked two, pointing downward behind her, and pushed, throwing herself into another arc. "What did I ever do without this?" Vin thought, opening her eyes, whipping her mist cloak behind her with a throw of the arm. Eventually she began to fall again, and this time she didn't toss a coin. She burned pewter to strengthen her limbs and landed with a thump on the wall surrounding Keep Venture's grounds. Her bronze showed no signs of allomantic activity nearby, and her steel revealed no unusual patterns of metal moving toward the keep. Vin crouched on the dark wall for a few moments, right at the edge, toes curling over the lip of the stone. The rock was cool beneath her feet, and her tin made her skin far more sensitive than normal. She could tell that the wall needed to be cleaned. Lichens were beginning to grow along its side, encouraged by the night's humidity, protected from the day's sun by a nearby tower. Vin remained quiet, watching a slight breeze push and churn the mists. She heard the movement on the street below before she saw it. She tensed, checking her reserves, before she was able to discern a wolfhound's shape in the shadows. She dropped a coin over the side of the wall, then leapt off. Orsieur waited as she landed quietly before him, using a quick push on the coin to slow her descent.
"You move quickly," Vin noted appreciatively.
"All I had to do was round the palace grounds, mistress.
Still, you stuck closer to me this time than you ever did before. That wolfhound's body is faster than a human one."
Orsieur paused.
"I suppose," he admitted.
"Think you can follow me through the city?"
"Probably," Orsieur said. "If you lose me, I will return to this point so you can retrieve me."
Vin turned and dashed down a side street. Orsieur then took off quietly behind her, following.
"Let's see how well he does in a more demanding chase," she thought, burning pewter and increasing her speed.
She sprinted along the cool cobbles, barefoot as always. A normal man could never have maintained such a speed. Even a trained runner couldn't have kept pace with her, for he would have quickly tired. With pewter, however, Vin could run for hours at breakneck speeds. It gave her strength, lent her an unreal sense of balance as she shot down the dark, mist-ruled street, a flurry of cloak tassels and bare feet. Orsieur kept pace. He loped beside her in the night, breathing heavily, focused on his running.
"Impressive," Vin thought, then turned down an alleyway. She easily jumped the 6-foot-tall fence at the back, passing into the garden of some lesser nobleman's mansion. She spun, skidding on the wet grass, and watched. Orsieur crested the top of the wooden fence, his dark canine form dropping through the mists to land in the loam before Vin. He came to a stop, resting on his haunches, waiting quietly, panting. There was a look of defiance in his eyes. All right, Vin thought, pulling out a handful of coins. Follow this. She dropped a coin and threw herself backward up into the air. She spun in the mists, twisting, then pushed herself sideways off a well spigot. She landed on a rooftop and jumped off, using another coin to push herself over the street below. She kept going, leaping from rooftop to rooftop, using coins when necessary. She occasionally shot a glance behind and saw a dark form struggling to keep up. He'd rarely followed her as a human. Usually she had checked in with him at specific points. Moving out in the night, jumping through the mists, this was the true domain of the Mistborn. Did Elend understand what he asked when he told her to bring Orsieur with her? If she stayed down on the streets, she'd expose herself. She landed on a rooftop, jarring to a sudden halt as she grabbed hold of the building's stone lip, leaning out over a street 3 stories below. She maintained her balance, mist swirling below her. All was silent. Well, that didn't take long, she thought. I'll just have to explain to Ellen that... Orsier's canine form thumped to the rooftop a short distance away. He padded over to her, then sat down on his haunches, waiting expectantly. Vin frowned. She'd traveled for a good 10 minutes, running over rooftops with the speed of a Mistborn. How did you get up here? She demanded.
I jumped atop a shorter building, then used it to reach these tenements, mistress, Orsieur said. Then I followed you along the rooftops. They are placed so closely together that it was not difficult to jump from one to another.
Vin's confusion must have shown, for Orsieur continued.
I may have been hasty in my judgment of these bones, mistress. They certainly do have an impressive sense of smell. In fact, all of their senses are quite keen. It was surprisingly easy to track you, even in the darkness.
I see, Vin said. Well, that's good.
Might I ask, mistress, the purpose of that chase?
Vin shrugged. I do this sort of thing every night.
It seemed like you were particularly intent on losing me. It will be very difficult to protect you if you don't let me stay near you.
Protect me? Vin asked. You can't even fight.
The contract forbids me from killing a human, Orsier said. I could, however, go for help, should you need it.
Or throw me a bit of atium in a moment of danger, Vin admitted. He's right. He could be useful. Why am I so determined to leave him behind? She glanced over at Orsieur, who sat patiently, his chest puffing from exertion. She hadn't realized that Condra even needed to breathe. He ate Kelsier. Come on, Vin said. She jumped from the building, pushing herself off a coin. She didn't pause to see if Orsieur followed. As she fell, she reached for another coin but decided not to use it. She pushed against a passing window bracket instead. Like most Mistborn, she often used clips, the smallest denomination of coin, to jump. It was very convenient that the economy supplied a prepackaged bit of metal of an ideal size and weight for jumping and shooting. To most Mistborn, the cost of a thrown clip, or even a bag of them, was negligible. But Vin was not most Mistborn. In her younger years, a handful of clips would have seemed an amazing treasure. That much money could have meant food for weeks if she scrimped. It also could have meant pain, even death, if the other thieves had discovered that she'd obtained such a fortune.
It had been a long time since she'd gone hungry. Though she still kept a pack of dried foods in her quarters, she did so more out of habit than anxiety. She honestly wasn't sure what she thought of the changes within her. It was nice not to have to worry about basic necessities, and yet those worries had been replaced by ones far more daunting. Worries involving the future of an entire nation. The future of a people. She landed on the city wall, a structure much higher and much better fortified than the small wall around Keep Venture. She hopped up on the battlements, fingers seeking a hold on one of the merlins as she leaned over the edge of the wall, looking out over the army's fires. She had never met Straff Venture, but she had heard enough from Elland to be worried. She sighed, pushing back off the battlement, and hopping onto the wall walk. Then she leaned back against one of the merlins. To the side, Orsir trotted up the wall steps and approached. Once again he went down onto his haunches, waiting patiently. For better or for worse, Vin's simple life of starvation and beatings was gone. Elland's fledgling kingdom was in serious danger, and she'd burned away the last of his atium, trying to keep herself alive. She'd left him exposed, not just to armies, but to any mistborn assassin who tried to kill him. An assassin like the Watcher, perhaps? The mysterious figure who had interfered in her fight against Set's mistborn. What did he want? Why did he watch her rather than Elland? Vin sighed, reaching into her coin pouch and pulling out her bar of duralumin. She still had the reserve of it with her, the bit she'd swallowed earlier. For centuries it had been assumed that there were only 10 allomantic metals, the 4 base metals and their alloys, plus atium and gold. Yet allomantic metals always came in pairs, a base metal and an alloy. It had always bothered Vin that atium and gold were considered a pair when neither was an alloy of the other. In the end, it had turned out that they weren't actually paired. They each had an alloy. One of these, malatium, the so-called 11th metal, had eventually given Vin the clue she'd needed to defeat the Lord Ruler. Somehow, Kelsier had found out about malatium. Sazed still hadn't been able to trace the legends that Kelsier had supposedly uncovered, teaching of the 11th metal and its power to defeat the Lord Ruler. Vin rubbed her finger on the slick surface of the duralumin bar. When Vin had last seen Sazed, he'd seemed frustrated, or at least as frustrated as Sazed ever grew, that he couldn't find even hints regarding Kelsier's supposed legends. Though Sazed claimed he'd left Luthadel to teach the people of the Final Empire, as was his duty as a keeper, Vin hadn't missed the fact that Sazed had gone south, the direction in which Kelsier claimed to have discovered the 11th metal. "And there are rumors about this metal, too?" Vin wondered, rubbing the duralumin. "Ones that might tell me what it does?" Each of the other metals produced an immediate, visible effect. Only copper, with its ability to create a cloud that masked an allomancer's powers from others, didn't have an obvious sensory clue to its purpose. Perhaps duralumin was similar. Could its effect be noticed only by another allomancer, one trying to use his or her powers on Vin? It was the opposite of aluminum, which made metals disappear. Did that mean duralumin would make other metals last longer? Movement. Vin just barely caught the hint of a shadowed motion. At first, a primal bit of terror rose in her. Was it the misty form? The ghost in the darkness she had seen the night before? "You were just seeing things," she told herself forcefully. "You were too tired." And in truth, the glimmer of motion proved too dark, too real, to be the same ghostly image. It was him. He stood atop one of the watchtowers, not crouching, not even bothering to hide. Was he arrogant or foolish, this unknown mistborn? Vin smiled, her apprehension turning to excitement. She prepared her metals, checking her reserves. Everything was ready.
tonight I catch you, my friend.
Vin spun, throwing out a spray of coins. Either the Mistborn knew he'd been spotted or he was ready for an attack, for he easily dodged. Orsure hopped to his feet, spinning, and Vin whipped her belt free, dropping her medals.
"Follow if you can," she whispered to the Chandra, then sprang into the darkness after her prey.
The Watcher shot away, bounding through the night. Vin had little experience chasing another Mistborn. Her only real chance to practice had come during Kelsier's training sessions. She soon found herself struggling to keep up with the Watcher, and she felt a stab of guilt for what she had done to Orsure earlier. She was learning firsthand how difficult it was to follow a determined Mistborn through the mists, and she didn't have the advantage of a dog's sense of smell. She did, however, have tin. It made the night clearer and enhanced her hearing. With it, she managed to follow the Watcher as he moved toward the center of the city. Eventually, he let himself drop down toward one of the central fountain squares. Vin fell as well, hitting the slick cobblestones with a flare of pewter, then dodging to the side as he threw out a handful of coins. Metal rang against stone in the quiet night, coins plinging against statues and cobblestones. Vin smiled as she landed on all fours. Then she bounded forward, jumping with pewter-enhanced muscles and pulling one of the coins up into her hand. Her opponent leaped backward, landing on the edge of a nearby fountain. Vin landed, then dropped her coin, using it to throw herself upward over the Watcher's head. He stooped, watching warily as she passed over him. Vin caught one of the bronze statues at the center of the fountain itself and pulled herself to a stop atop it. She crouched on the uneven footing, looking down at her opponent. He stood balanced on one foot at the edge of the fountain, quiet and black in the churning mists. There was a challenge in his posture. "Can you catch me?" he seemed to ask. Vin whipped her daggers out and jumped free of the statue. She pushed herself directly toward the Watcher, using the cool bronze as an anchor. The Watcher used the statue as well, pulling himself forward. He shot just beneath Vin, throwing up a wave of water, his incredible speed letting him skid like a stone across the fountain's still surface. As he jumped clear of the water, he pushed himself away, shooting across the square. Vin landed on the fountain lip, chill water spraying across her. She growled, jumping after the Watcher. As he landed, he spun and whipped out his own daggers. She rolled beneath his first attack, then brought her daggers up in a two-handed double jab. The Watcher jumped quickly out of the way, his daggers sparkling and dropping beads of fountain water. He had a lithe power about him as he came to rest in a crouch. His body looked tense and sure, capable. Vin smiled again, breathing quickly. She hadn't felt like this since those nights so long ago when she'd sparred with Kelsier. She remained in a crouch, waiting, watching the mist curl between her and her opponent. He was of medium height, had a wiry build, and he wore no mist cloak.
Why no cloak?
Mist cloaks were the ubiquitous mark of her kind, a symbol of pride and security. She was too far away to distinguish his face. She thought she saw a hint of a smile, however, as he jumped backward and pushed against another statue. The chase began again. Vin followed him through the city, flaring steel, landing on roofs and streets, pushing herself in great arcing leaps. The two bounded through Luthadel like children on a playground, Vin trying to cut off her opponent, he cleverly managing to stay just a little bit ahead of her. He was good. Far better than any Mistborn she had known or faced, save perhaps for Kelsier. However, she'd grown greatly in skill since she'd sparred with the survivor. Could this newcomer be even better? The thought thrilled her. She'd always considered Kelsier a paradigm of allomantic ability, and it was easy to forget that he'd had his powers for only a couple of years before the collapse.
"That's the same amount of time that I've been training," Vin realized as she landed in a small, cramped street.
She frowned, crouching, remaining still. She'd seen the Watcher fall toward this street. Narrow and poorly maintained, the street was practically an alleyway, lined on both sides by 3- and 4-story buildings. There was no motion,
Either the watcher had slipped away or he was hiding nearby. She burned iron, but the iron lines revealed no motion. However, there was another way. Vin pretended to still be looking around, but she turned on her bronze, flaring it, trying to pierce the copper cloud that she thought might be close. And there he was, hiding in a room behind the mostly closed shutters of a derelict building. Now that she knew where to look, she saw the bit of metal he'd probably used to jump up to the second story, the latch he must have pulled on to quickly close the shutters behind him. He'd probably scouted this street beforehand, always intending to lose her here. Clever, Vin thought. He couldn't have anticipated her ability to pierce copper clouds, but attacking him now might give away that ability. Vin stood quietly, thinking of him crouching above, tensely waiting for her to move off. She smiled. Reaching inside, she examined the Duralumin reserve. There was a possible way to discover if burning it created some change in the way she looked to another Mistborn. The Watcher was likely burning most of his metals, trying to determine what her next move would be. So, thinking herself incredibly clever, Vin burned the 14th metal. A massive explosion sounded in her ears. Vin gasped, dropping to her knees in shock. Everything grew bright around her as if some crack of energy had illuminated the entire street. And she felt cold. Frigidly, stunningly cold. She moaned, trying to make sense of the sound. It wasn't an explosion, but many explosions. A rhythmic thudding, like a drum pounding just beside her. Her heartbeat. And the breeze, loud as a howling wind. The scratchings of a dog searching for food. Someone snoring in their sleep. It was as if her hearing had been magnified 100 times. And then, nothing. Vin fell backward against the cobblestones, the sudden rush of light, coldness, and sound evaporating. A form moved in the shadows nearby, but she couldn't make it out. She couldn't see in the darkness anymore. Her tin was gone, she realized, coming to. My entire store of tin has been burned away. I was burning it when I turned on the Duralumin. I burned them both at once. That's the secret. The Duralumin had burned away all her tin in a single, massive burst. It had made her senses amazingly acute for a very short time, but had stolen away her entire reserve. And, looking, she could see that her bronze and her pewter, the other metals she'd been burning at the time, were gone as well. The onrush of sensory information had been so vast that she hadn't noticed the effects of the other two. Think about it later, Vin told herself, shaking her head. She felt like she should be deafened and blinded, but she wasn't. She was just a bit stunned. The dark form moved up beside her in the mists. She didn't have time to recover. She pushed herself to her feet, stumbling. The form, it was too short to be the Watcher. It was, Mistress, do you require assistance? Vin paused as Orsure padded up to her, then sat on his haunches. You managed to follow, Vin said. It was not easy, Mistress, Orsure said flatly. Do you require assistance? What? No assistance. Vin shook her head, clearing her mind. I guess that's one thing I didn't think of by making you a dog. You can't carry metals for me now. The Chandra cocked his head, then padded over into an alleyway. He returned a moment later with something in his mouth. Her belt. He dropped it by her feet, then returned to his waiting position. Vin picked up the belt, pulling off one of her extra metal vials. Thank you, she said slowly. That is very thoughtful of you. I fulfill my contract, Mistress, the Chandra said. Nothing more. Well, this is more than you've ever done before, she thought, downing a vial and feeling her reserves return. She burned tin, restoring her night vision, releasing a veil of tension from her mind. Since she'd discovered her powers, she'd never had to go out at night in complete darkness. The shutters of the Watcher's room were open. He had apparently fled during her fit. Vin sighed.
"Mistress!" Orsir snapped.
Vin spun. A man landed quietly behind her. He looked familiar for some reason. He had a lean face, topped with dark hair, and his head was cocked slightly in confusion. She could see the question in his eyes. Why had she fallen down? Vin smiled.
"Maybe I just did it to lure you closer," she whispered,
softly, yet loud enough that she knew tin-enhanced ears would hear her. The Mistborn smiled, then tipped his head to her as if in respect.
"Who are you?" Vin asked, stepping forward.
"An enemy," he replied, holding up a hand to ward her back. Vin paused. Mist swirled between them on the quiet street.
"Why then did you help me fight those assassins?"
"Because," he said, "I'm also insane." Vin frowned, eyeing the man. She had seen insanity before in the eyes of beggars. This man was not insane. He stood proudly, eyes controlled as he regarded her in the darkness.
"What kind of game is he playing?" she wondered.
Her instincts, a lifetime's worth of instincts, warned her to be wary. She had only just learned to trust her friends, and she wasn't about to offer the same privilege to a man she had met in the night. And yet it had been over a year since she'd spoken to another Mistborn. There were conflicts within her that she couldn't explain to the others. Even Mistings like Ham and Breeze couldn't understand the strange dual life of a Mistborn. Part assassin, part bodyguard, part noblewoman, part confused, quiet girl. Did this man have similar troubles with his identity? Perhaps she could make an ally out of him, bringing a second Mistborn to the defense of the Central Dominance. Even if she couldn't, she certainly couldn't afford to fight him. A spar in the night was one thing, but if their contest grew dangerous, Atium might come into play. If that happened, she'd lose. The Watcher studied her with a careful eye.
"Answer something for me," he said in the mists.
Vin nodded.
"Did you really kill him?"
"Yes,"
Vin whispered. There was only one person he could mean. He nodded slowly.
"Why do you play their games?"
"Whose games?"
The Watcher gestured into the mists toward Keep Venture.
"Those aren't games," Vin said. "It's no game when the people I love are in danger."
The Watcher stood quietly, then shook his head as if disappointed. Then he pulled something from his sash. Vin jumped back immediately. The Watcher, however, simply flipped a coin to the ground between them. It bounced a couple of times, coming to a rest on the cobbles. Then the Watcher pushed himself backward into the air. Vin didn't follow. She reached up, rubbing her head. She still felt like she should have a headache.
"You're letting him go?"
Orsior asked. Vin nodded.
"We're done for tonight. He fought well."
"You sound almost respectful," the Chandra said.
Vin turned, frowning at the hint of disgust in the Chandra's voice. Orsir sat patiently, displaying no further emotion. She sighed, tying her belt around her waist.
"We're going to need to come up with a harness or something for you," she said. "I want you to carry extra metal vials for me, like you did as a human."
"A harness won't be necessary, mistress," Orsir said.
"Oh?"
Orsir rose, padding forward.
"Please get out one of your vials."
Vin did as requested, pulling out a small glass vial.
Orsir stopped, then turned one shoulder toward her. As she watched, the fur parted and the flesh itself split, showing forth veins and layers of skin. Vin pulled back a bit.
"There is no need to be worried, mistress," Orsir said. "My flesh is not like your own. I have more control over it, you might say. Place the metal vial inside my shoulder."
Vin did as asked. The flesh sealed around the vial, obscuring it from view. Experimentally, Vin burned iron. No blue lines appeared pointing toward the hidden vial. Metal inside of a person's stomach couldn't be affected by another allomancer. Indeed, metal piercing a body, like Inquisitor spikes or Vin's own earring, couldn't be pushed or pulled by someone else. Apparently, the same rule applied to metals hidden within a chondra.
"I will deliver this to you in an emergency," Orsir said.
"Thank you," Vin said.
"The contract, mistress. Do not give me thanks. I do only what I am required."
Vin nodded slowly.
"Let's go back to the palace, then," she said. "I want to check on Elend."
"But let me begin at the beginning. I met Elendi first in Hrenium. He was a young lad then, and had not yet been warped by a decade spent leading armies."
9. Marsh had changed. There was something harder about the former Seeker. Something in the way he always seemed to be staring at things Sazed couldn't see. Something in his blunt responses and terse language. Of course, Marsh had always been a straightforward man. Sazed eyed his friend as the two strode down the dusty highway. They had no horses. Even if Sazed had possessed one, most beasts wouldn't go near an Inquisitor.
"What did Spook say that Marsh's nickname was?"
Sazed thought to himself as they walked.
"Before his transformation, they used to call him Iron Eyes."
The name that had turned out to be chillingly prophetic. Most of the others found Marsh's transformed state discomforting, and it left him isolated. Though Marsh hadn't seemed to mind the treatment, Sazed had made a special effort to befriend the man. He still didn't know if Marsh appreciated the gesture or not. They did seem to get along well. Both shared an interest in scholarship and history, and both were interested in the religious climate of the Final Empire.
"And he did come looking for me," Sazed thought. "Of course, he did claim that he wanted to help in case the Inquisitors weren't all gone from the conventicle of Saren."
It was a weak excuse. Despite his powers as a ferrochemist, Sazed was no warrior.
"You should be in Luthadel," Marsh said.
Sazed looked up. Marsh had spoken bluntly, as usual, without preamble.
"Why do you say that?" Sazed asked.
"They need you there."
"The rest of the Final Empire has need of me too, Marsh. I am a keeper. One group of people should not be able to monopolize all of my time."
Marsh shook his head.
"These peasants, they will forget your passing. No one will forget the things that will soon happen in the Central Dominance."
"You would be surprised, I think, at what men can forget. Wars and kingdoms may seem important now, but even the Final Empire proved mortal. Now that it has fallen, the Keepers have no business being involved in politics."
"Most would say we never had any business being involved in politics at all."
Marsh turned toward him. Those eyes, sockets filled entirely with steel. Sazed did not shiver, but he felt distinctly uncomfortable.
"And your friends?" Marsh asked.
This touched on something more personal. Sazed looked away, thinking of Vin and of his vow to Kelsier that he would protect her.
"She needs little protection now," he thought. "She's grown more adept at allomancy than even Kelsier was.
and yet Sazed knew that there were modes of protection that didn't relate to fighting. These things, support, counsel, kindness, were vital to every person, and most especially to Vin. So much rested on that poor girl's shoulders.
"I have sent help," Sazed said. "What help I can."
"Not good enough," Marsh said. "The things happening in Luthadel are too important to ignore."
"I am not ignoring them, Marsh," Sazed said. "I am simply performing my duty as best I can."
Marsh finally turned away.
"The wrong duty. You will return to Luthadel once we are finished here."
Sazed opened his mouth to argue, but said nothing. What was there to say? Marsh was right. Though he had no proof, Sazed knew that there were important things happening in Luthadel. Things that would require his aid to fight. Things that likely affected the future of the entire land once known as the Final Empire. So, he closed his mouth and trudged after Marsh. He would return to Luthadel, proving himself a rebel once again. Perhaps, in the end, he would realize that there was no ghostly threat facing the world, that he had simply returned because of his own selfish desire to be with his friends. In fact, he hoped that proved to be the truth. The alternative made him very uncomfortable.
Alendi's height struck me the first time I saw him. Here was a man who towered over others, a man who, despite his youth and his humble clothing, demanded respect.
10. The Assembly Hall was in the former Steel Ministry Canton of Finance headquarters. It was a low-ceilinged space, more of a large lecture room than an assembly hall. There were rows of benches fanning out in front of a raised stage. On the right-hand side of the stage, Elland had constructed a tier of seats for the assembly members. On the left of the stage, he had constructed a single lectern for speakers. The lectern faced the assemblymen, not the crowd. The common people were, however, encouraged to attend. Elland thought that everyone should be interested in the workings of their government. It pained him that the assembly's weekly meetings usually had a small audience. Vin's seat was on the stage, but at the back, directly opposite the audience. From her vantage with the other bodyguards, she would look past the lectern toward the crowd. Another row of Ham's guards, in regular clothing, sat in the first row of the audience, providing a first line of protection. Elland had balked at Vin's demands to have guards both in front of the stage and behind it. He thought that bodyguards sitting right behind the speakers would be distracting. Ham and Vin, however, had insisted. If Elland was going to stand up in front of a crowd every week, Vin wanted to be certain she could keep a close eye on him, and on those watching him. Getting to her chair, therefore, required Vin to walk across the stage. Stares followed her. Some of the watching crowd were interested in the scandal. They assumed that she was Elland's mistress, and a king sleeping with his personal assassin made for good gossip. Others were interested in the politics. They wondered how much influence Vin had over Elland, and whether they could use her to get the king's ear. Still others were curious about the growing legends. They wondered if a girl like Vin could really have slain the Lord Ruler. Vin hurried her pace. She passed the assemblyman, and found her seat next to Ham, who, despite the formal occasion, still wore a simple vest with no shirt. Sitting next to him in her trousers and shirt, Vin didn't feel quite so out of place. Ham smiled, clapping her affectionately on the shoulder. She had to force herself not to jump at the touch. It wasn't that she disliked Ham, quite the opposite, actually. She loved him as she did all of the former members of Kelsier's band. It was just that, well, she had trouble explaining it even to herself. Ham's innocent gesture made her want to squirm. It seemed to her that people shouldn't be so casual with the way they touched others. She pushed those thoughts away. She had to learn to be like other people. Elland deserved a woman who was normal. He was already there. He nodded to Vin as he noticed her arrival, and she smiled. Then he turned back to speaking quietly with Lord Penrod, one of the noblemen in the assembly.
"Ellen will be happy," Vin whispered. "Place is packed."
"They're worried," Ham said quietly, "and worried people pay more attention to things like this. Can't say I'm happy. All these people make our job harder."
Vin nodded, scanning the audience. The crowd was a strangely mixed one, a collection of different groups who would never have met together during the days of the Final Empire. A major part were noblemen, of course. Vin frowned, thinking of how often various members of the nobility tried to manipulate Elland, and of the promises he made to them.
"What's that look for?" Ham asked, nudging her.
Vin eyed the thug. Expectant eyes twinkled in his firm, rectangular face. Ham had an almost supernatural sense when it came to arguments. Vin sighed.
"I don't know about this, Ham."
"This?"
"This," Vin said quietly, waving her hand at the assembly. "Ellen tries so hard to make everyone happy. He gives so much away, his power, his money."
"He just wants to see that everyone is treated fairly."
"It's more than that, Ham," Vin said. "It's like he's determined to make everyone a nobleman."
"Would that be such a bad thing?"
"If everyone is a nobleman, then there is no such thing as a nobleman. Everyone can't be rich, and everyone can't be in charge. That's just not the way things work."
"Perhaps," Ham said thoughtfully. "But doesn't Ellen have a civic duty to try and make sure justice is served?"
"Civic duty?" Vin thought. "I should have known better than to talk to Ham about something like this."
Vin looked down.
"I just think he could see that everyone was treated well without having an assembly. All they do is argue and try to take his power away. And he lets them."
Ham let the discussion die, and Vin turned back to her study of the audience. It appeared that a large group of mill workers had arrived first and managed to get the best seats. Early in the assembly's history, perhaps 10 months before, the nobility had sent servants to reserve seats for them, or had bribed people to give up their places. As soon as Ellen had discovered this, however, he had forbidden both practices. Other than the noblemen and the mill workers, there was a large number of the new class, ska merchants and craftsmasters, now allowed to set their own prices for their services. They were the true winners in Ellen's economy. Beneath the Lord Ruler's oppressive hand, only the few most extraordinarily skilled ska had been able to rise to positions of even moderate comfort. Without those restrictions, these same people had quickly proven to have abilities and acumen far above their noble counterparts. They represented a faction in the assembly at least as powerful as that of the nobility. Other ska peppered the crowd. They looked much the same as they had before Ellen's rise to power. While noblemen generally wore suits, complete with day hats and coats, these ska wore simple trousers. Some of them were still dirty from their day's labor, their clothing old, worn, and stained with ash. And yet, there was something different about them. It wasn't in their clothing, but their postures. They sat a little straighter, their heads held a little higher, and they had enough free time to attend an assembly meeting. Ellen finally stood to begin the meeting. He had let his attendants dress him this morning, and the result was attire that was almost completely free of dishevelment. His suit fit well, all the buttons were done up, and his vest was of an appropriate dark blue. His hair was even neatly styled, the short brown curls lying flat. Normally, Ellen would begin the meeting by calling on other speakers, assemblymen who would drone on for hours about various topics like taxation rates or city sanitation. However, this day, there were more pressing matters.
"Gentlemen," Ellen said, "I beg your leave to depart from our usual agenda this afternoon, in the light of our current state of city affairs."
The group of 24 assemblymen nodded, a few muttering things under their breath. Ellen ignored them. He was comfortable before crowds, far more comfortable than Vin would ever be. As he unrolled his speech, Vin kept one eye on the crowd, watching for reactions or problems. "The dire nature of our situation should be quite obvious," Elland said, beginning the speech he had prepared earlier. "We face a danger that this city has never known. Invasion and siege from an outside tyrant. We are a new nation, a kingdom founded on principles unknown during the days of the Lord Ruler. Yet we are already a kingdom of tradition. Freedom for the Ska. Rule by our own choice and of our own design. Noblemen who don't have to cower before the Lord Ruler's obligators and inquisitors. Gentlemen, 1 year is not enough. We have tasted freedom, and we need time to savor it. During the last month, we have frequently discussed and argued regarding what to do should this day arrive. Obviously, we are of many minds on the issue. Therefore, I ask for a vote of solidarity. Let us promise ourselves and these people that we will not give this city over to a foreign power without due consideration. Let us resolve to gather more information, to seek for other avenues, and even to fight, should it be deemed necessary." The speech went on, but Vin had heard it a dozen times as Elland practiced it. As he spoke, she found herself eyeing the crowd. She was most worried about the obligators she saw sitting in the back. They showed little reaction to the negative light in which Elland's remarks cast them. She'd never understood why Elland allowed the Steel Ministry to continue teaching. It was the last real remnant of the Lord Ruler's power. Most obligators obstinately refused to lend their knowledge of bureaucracy and administration to Elland's government, and they still regarded Ska with contempt. And yet Elland let them remain. He maintained a strict rule that they were not allowed to incite rebellion or violence. However, he also didn't eject them from the city, as Vin had suggested. Actually, if the choice had been solely hers, she probably would have executed them. Eventually, Ellen's speech drew to a close, and Vin turned her attention back to him.